Tonight, the Columbia Workshop was to have repeated They Fly Through the Air with the Greatest of Ease, Norman Corwin's verse drama about the aerial bombardment of civilian populations. The performance was scheduled 2 months ago, but since that time, the war tactics which the author indicted with such emotional force have become an actuality, and we are reminded only too vividly every day of the point of the play. For this reason, we are indefinitely postponing tonight's performance of They Fly Through the Air. In its place, we bring you another work by Mr. Corwin, the fifth in a series he has written for CBS entitled So This Is Radio. The installment about to be presented was scheduled for last Monday night, but was not presented because of our European schedule. And now, the fifth episode of So This Is Radio.
Program about music, about the music you hear on your radio, and the men who make that music, and a little about you. It's going to be an unusual sort of musical program for a number of reasons. To wit,
one, although it concerns serious music, you won't hear much serious music.
Two, although it concerns light music, you won't hear much light music.
Three, although it concerns a seemingly simple phase of radio, actually, the subject is quite complex.
Four, although this program has already 1/30th gone by, it has yet to make a formal opening announcement, which is...
Tonight, in the fifth and last of a series of special programs telling the inside story of radio, Columbia goes behind both the scenes and sounds of broadcasting to demonstrate the complicated technique of arranging and producing musical programs.
Hear this, listener. Give it a careful ear. It's not a composition by some modern master of cacophony, but just musicians tuning up. Does this annoy you? Really, now, you should respect this noise, because all music starts from this. From just such random tooting and such aimless trills come symphonies and rumbas, folk songs, hymns, concertos, operas, divertimenti. And you may take your pick of what comes out of all this tuning. The invitation goes for every owner of a radio receiving set. You 100 million critics in our audience. Yes, I said critics. You know what you like and what you don't like, and you have good reasons to support your taste. For proof, we need but canvas music lovers up and down the continent. Oh, Mr. Spiegelglass, you grocer in Batavia, Ohio, what music do you want to hear? The overture to William Tell? You've come to the right place for it. Your radio. I say, Miss Halliday in San Diego, California, for you, a bit to dance to. You ranger on the Texan range, did you request the Brahms First Symphony? Then let this mingle with the night sounds and the crackling of your fire. And you in Syracuse, who feel the need of consolation, would you like a hymn your father sang in times of tribulation? And you, successful jurist in Manhattan, what would you have? What's that again? Arkansas Traveler? Why, certainly, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. travelers, not alone in Arkansas, but in this whole wide, warring world of ours, are much accompanied by music. The naivest ear, the mind that cannot carry, but aborts the simplest melody, the spirit most insensitive to song, meets music at the crossways. We're lulled by lullabies in childhood, and we fall in love with waltzes in our hearts. We marry to a wedding march and tramp away to someone else's war while drums beat and wild bugles bray. And when we die, the music's somewhat softer. It's a solemn sort of lullaby they play, a nocturne for the soul, an overture to nothing in particular. We are indeed accompanied by music. Yes, and in these days, you all can take that literally. You're not alone, you solitary listener, no matter what the curving distances may be between you and the next live human being. Is the night around you now prosaic? Does the silence sound monotonous? Then give your radio a shake, for there's music in the air at every other number on your dial. Yes. Jigs and preludes and kazatskis, ballads, swing tunes, polkas, tangos, serenades and sonatinas, cowboy songs and sinfonietas, oratorios...
May I interrupt, please?
Oh, why, yes, go right ahead.
I don't know if you remember me,
but... Of course I do. We've met before another night. You're the average listener.
That's right.
How are you tonight, sir?
Very well, thank you, but slightly puzzled.
Puzzled? Why?
Well... Suppose I, as a not-too-average listener, can't keep my mind on music. Suppose I rarely listen to it. Suppose the only thing that really sticks with me is drama.
In that case, you would still be hearing music.
Well, how do you figure that?
Music is a part of radio dramatics.
Oh, you mean at the beginning and end of the program?
No, no. All through the program. We call it cue music.
Oh. Well, I'm not sure I get what you mean. I've listened to a lot of dramatic shows, but I... can't place any cue music.
That's just the point. It must have been good cue music that you heard, because such music never should attract your interest so much that you neglect the program. It should support the scene, or bind the action at its loosest joints, not crowd the actors off the air. Sometimes it serves to symbolize...
Look, I'm afraid this is getting away from me a little bit. Let me ask you this. Just how does music symbolize?
Let's be concrete. Here's a conversation between a radio director and a radio conductor studying a script.
Now, right here, what I want is something to convey the sense that this is a program about radio, and at the same time, give the feeling of a punch opening.
I see. You have any special effects in mind?
Well, I thought we might start out with two streams of code symbolizing radio communication.
Uh-huh.
And let the code run a while, then take up the pitch and tempo core of the code and develop the material into a good, strong fanfare.
You know what I think would be better?
Yeah.
Begin with code, as you say. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And then sneak in a background of symbolic music, but don't go directly into the development. Instead, fade the music, keeping the code constant.
Wait a minute.
And then, suddenly, come in with your fanfare. Now you do the code, and I'll show you what I mean.
All right. Okay, let's try it that way. Only thing is, I want to be sure
Does that help answer your question?
It certainly does. That's fine. That clears up what you mean by cue music.
No. That's only part of what we mean. There's also the transition and the background cue.
I wonder, could you illustrate those also, just so I'd be sure not to get them mixed?
All right, sure. Listen to the same director talking to his sound men and musicians about a transition in the production of a fantasy.
Now, this is an important transition, because not only must it take us from one place to another... but it must introduce us to Nero, an entirely new character, when we get there.
Uh-huh.
Now, first the narrator tells you that you're going to be transferred by radio to hell. He says, don't be surprised if you're deafened by thunder just as you start in your journey under. You'll hear earthquakes and all of the commoner variety of natural phenomena, and so below via radio to the regions where the legions of the wicked go. Now, we've got to fit that description. Sound.
Yeah?
We'll work out the thunder and earthquake and descent part separately.
All right.
Violinist.
Yeah?
What I want you to do is pick up the pitch of an oscillator and begin improvising. Just runs or something. We'll put you in an echo chamber to create the feeling that we're in an empty cavern in hell, listening to Nero practicing the fiddle. The improvisation should be broad, diverse style. You should say to me...
And so, below, via radio, to the regions where the legions of the wicked go.
Follow that all right?
Yes, I did. Thanks. Wasn't there another type of cue music you mentioned? Background?
Oh, yes. That's the kind that backs up speech to heighten its emotional value. Let's demonstrate this type by recalling the end to the first program of So This Is Radio. Here's the final speech, first with and then without the background music.
So good night, my friend in Dutch Flat, California. Good night, Key West. Good night, Manassas, Maine. Good night, Long Island, Kennebunkport, Springfield, Allentown, and Phoenix. Muhlenberg and Utica, Seattle, Charlottesville, and Honolulu. Good night. And won't you please be with us when the clock reads 10, 9, 8, and 7, east to west across the country, come next Monday night? Good night.
And here it is, with music spotted to create a sense of movement and suggest a multitude of listeners.
So good night, my friend in Dutch Flat, California. Good night, Key West. Good night, Manassas, Maine. Good night, Long Island, Kennebunkport, Springfield, Allentown and Phoenix, Muhlenberg and Utica, Seattle, Charlottesville and Honolulu. Good night. And won't you please be with us when the clock reads 10, 9, 8 and 7, east to west across the country, come next Monday night. Good night.
Well... now I understand what you mean by music cues. But still, I'm puzzled.
About what?
Well, about music in general. You know, it's always been a great mystery to me. I hear music on the air, and I enjoy it, and that's fine. But, well, how does it get there? Where does it begin?
The music you tune in when you relax at home tomorrow night may have begun 2,000 years ago in Roman catacombs, or yesterday in Raymond Scott's imagination. It may have started darkly and anonymously in some ancient jungle, or perhaps it took form in the mind of J. Sebastian Bach.
No, I know all that. I mean, how does the process of getting a musical number on the air, well, how does that begin? What are the steps? Just like you'd show me through a factory.
Oh, well, if that's all you want, that's very simple. Meet the boys.
Hello. It begins with me. I'm the composer.
Oh, I see.
Yes, I compose.
That's fine. Mind if I watch you work?
Well, there's nothing much to watch. It's not like painting or sculpting. It's just writing notes down in a score.
Well, what's the score now?
In this case, a score for 18 instruments.
I see. I take it you work only when inspiration moves you.
Inspiration, my eye. I have to be more than inspired. This is work, mister.
Well, how's that?
Well, for one thing... every instant the orchestra's playing, each man must be instructed what note to play, how to attack it, how long to hold it, how loudly to play it, and often with what quality to play it.
Oh, you've got to tell them all that, huh?
Yeah.
Well, are you at all eccentric?
Very. I hate to be disturbed. If you'll excuse me, I'll be getting back to work.
Thank you. And you, sir, what do you do?
Well, I'm a copyist. You see, I take the composer's score, which is written as a whole,
and break it down to its component parts, one for each player.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. You see, I have to check each note of every player's part against the master score.
I see. And when you're through that job?
Well, that's where I come in. I'm a musical librarian, although I have a lot of other tasks. In this case, I would take the 18 parts made by the copyist, assemble them with parts of other compositions to be played on the same program, and put them all together in a cardboard folder. And when the broadcast's over, all parts must be reassembled and returned to the files.
Well, now, don't forget me. I'm the porter. I take the orchestra folders that the librarian has put together and carry them to the studio and put them on the music stands in front of each musician's chair. And I also put the chairs in place, too.
Yes, and that arrangement of chairs is up to me. I'm the production man.
Oh, I see.
It isn't just a case of making a pretty or comfortable pattern, because the seating, or setup as we call it, is extremely important.
I see.
It determines whether the sound of each instrument in the orchestra is available to the microphone in its proper amount. What?
Oh, I didn't say anything.
Oh, excuse me. Well, does this make any sense to you?
Oh, yes, of course. I never knew before that you had to be so careful about seating an orchestra.
Oh, yeah, you sure do. Now, let me show you what would happen if the setup wasn't right. Now, we'll play a number first the way it should be played. Then show you what would happen if we had a different seating plan. In each case, the orchestra will be playing the notes correctly without changing the expression or volume from the way you hear it first. Now we open another mic placed differently from the one you heard this through. And this amounts to the same things as changing the seating arrangement.
Well, that certainly makes quite a difference.
Yes, indeed it does.
Yeah, it sure does.
It sure does.
Well... Now, are there other questions you might like to ask?
Well, I hope you don't think this nervy of me, but all my life I've had an ambition to conduct an orchestra. Do you suppose, well, as long as you're just demonstrating and not playing a real concert or anything, do you suppose I could just sort of take over the baton, as they say, for a few bars?
We'd like exceedingly to oblige you, but without meaning any disrespect to your own talents, it would be perhaps uncivil to our orchestra.
Uncivil?
Yes. You see, each of these men is a musician who's made of music a lifetime's career. Behind each placid brow are years of finger exercises in conservatories, concerts all around the country and the world, study of such mathematic matters as solfeggio and orchestration, harmony and counterpoint.
Oh, I get it, of course. I should have thought of that myself. Why, I've no more right to ask to conduct this orchestra than I would have to ask a general if I could lead his army through a battle, or ask a surgeon if I could pry his knife out for a minor operation.
Exactly. You're an understanding man.
But here's the point. The average listener has a very dim picture of what conductors are and what their work is. I realize now it's highly specialized, but for myself at least, I'd like to know what difference there is, say, between three or four competent conductors.
Oh, there are differences, all right. For illustration, let's eavesdrop on a conference in the office of Davidson Taylor, assistant to the vice president in charge of broadcast for Columbia.
Well, what do you think, Dave?
Well, it all depends on what you want. If you want a man to give you a very flashy production type of show, use Ted. He can whip it into shape for you very fast, and he'll save you a lot of money on rehearsals. Don't expect, though, that the show is going to have any particularly new, fresh color. But if you want a really exciting job and have got plenty of time for rehearsal, Arthur is the one to do it for you. May not sound like anything you've ever heard before, but it will be good.
Well, that's a consideration.
Maybe the best fellow would be Jerry. He has plenty of ideas, and he knows how to present them in a very simple, attractive form. Besides, he's a good disciplinarian and very quiet to work with.
Well, that always helps.
However, if you want a show the way we talked about, I think you'd better take Arthur. He has the most subtle way of accompanying singers.
Oh, gosh, and to think that here I was offering to conduct your orchestra for you. Well, that'll teach me. Have you got time for some more of my curiosity?
Oh, certainly. What do you want to know?
Well, I'm curious to know just what kind of problems an executive like Mr. Taylor runs into. Offhand, I'd think that the music on a network runs by itself, program by program. Well, I mean, surely he doesn't have to worry about things like the New York Philharmonic Symphony concerts or the syncopators or the Deep River Boys. What, if I'm not too impertinent, what does he do?
Hello?
Jim, this is Dave Taylor. The stadium concert's indoors tonight on account of the rain. The substitute program will be the Roman Carnival Overture and Don Juan for the first half and the Beethoven Six for the second.
Okay.
Will you be sure that Grossman has the engineer up at the Great Hall in plenty of time? And get Bill Feinschreiber to write a new script.
Right.
And you'd better tell Aaron Copland that he's going to have to change his whole intermission discussion. He was going to talk about Block, and now Block's off the program.
Yes, I'll tell him, Dave.
Then be sure to let Rolf Kaltenborn know the broadcast has changed in plenty of time to make the setup indoors.
Righto, Dave.
Cable from Mr. Taylor to Ed Murrow at CBS in London.
Can Hindemith Viola Concerto from Berne start 5 minutes earlier so as to catch Split Network? Yes?
The Singleton wants to know if you can listen to vocal auditions from 4 to 5 tomorrow.
Hold on. Let me look at my calendar. Miss Inman, what's down for tomorrow afternoon?
Luncheon with the manager of that Broadway publishing house at 1.
Mm-hmm.
Conference on School of the Air folk music series at 2:30. Meeting with Mr. Rosenthal of the Artist Bureau at 3:30. Appointment with Mr. Philip Wyman of Cincinnati Conservatory at 4.
I see. Hello?
Yes, sir?
I'll be able to listen if the rest of the audition board...
Colorature soprano.
Rating
B.
Present at audition.
5 members of audition board and artist bureau.
Audition numbers.
Una voce poco fa, mad scene from Lucia, only a rose.
Appearance
good. Small in size, brunette. Good stage appearance.
Training.
Graduate of East Conservatory.
Interpretation
leaves a lot to be desired. Draggy at times, not completely interesting. Rather loosely knit.
Voice
somewhat hard in quality, rather mock vibrato for radio.
Diction
good.
Musicianship
good.
General criticism and remarks.
Tendency to scoop up the top note. Good vocal range. Very likely can be excellent singer.
Cable to detailer from Berres of Union Internationale de Radio Diffusion de Genève.
Can CBS and NBC originate intercontinental concert from Hawaii with typical island music to go to 26 nations morning of Sunday, October 15th?
Memo from Taylor to Fassett.
The International Broadcast Union wants us to do a world concert on the morning of October 15th.
Right.
Will you get together with Mr. Carlin at NBC and Mr. Seabock at Mutual and ask them what time they would like to have the concert?
Okay.
Then wire Webb Edwards, manager of our station KGMB at Honolulu, and find out whether he can make it.
Uh-huh.
And make sure it's not too early in the morning in Honolulu.
Right.
Remember, if we do it at 11 o'clock New York time, that would be 4 in the afternoon in London. It would be either 4:30 or 5:30 in the morning in Honolulu.
Yeah.
Find out what talent we can offer in our part of the program.
Wire from Mr. Taylor.
Take a letter, please.
Howard Barlow on the phone.
Will you take a memo, please?
Well, I certainly never had any idea there was that much work behind the music we hear on the air.
That's actually very little of it. Just a sample of a fairly light mid-afternoon's development.
Know what fascinates me especially?
What?
How you get music from other cities with such wonderful clarity and fidelity.
We thank you.
You certainly make it look easy, though I suppose it's pretty complicated stuff. You know, concerts from all around the country and the world, folk songs, festivals. Why, once I heard the choir in Notre Dame in Paris and some of those fancy gongs in Java all in one evening.
Oh, yes, we get around.
I don't want to embarrass you if you haven't anything lined up for tonight, but could you get us something remote outside the studio tonight?
We can and will. It happens we have a special line running right to the home of a musician out in the Middle West, St. Louis.
Oh, somebody famous, huh?
No. It could be if we wish, but you've already heard the greatest of the world's musicians on your radio, and moreover, you can hear them almost every night. Instead, we bring you now a preview of a musical career. A boy practicing a piano in his home. A boy who represents all children for whom radio makes music plentiful and natural and everyday as sun and air. He never could have been heard, and he never could have heard such music and so much of it had he been born when we were listeners. And 20 years ago, we never could have reached out westward by 1,000 miles into another zone of time and into someone's private home to hear him practicing. We take you now to where a music public's never been before, to 1280 Amherst Place, St. Louis.
This is Don Phillips of the staff of Columbia Station, KMOX, St. Louis. We are speaking to you from the home of Mr. and Mrs. Charles R. Townsend. At the moment, their young son, Bob, just turned 14 years, is hard at work on a new piano piece. Hate to interrupt him, but we would like to find out a bit about this typical American youngster and just what he intends to do with his music when he grows up. Bob, excuse us for stopping you at your practicing like that, but we're right in your home with you, and we'd like to ask you a few questions, if you don't mind. Tell us, how long have you been studying the piano?
Oh, I'd say about 6 years. 6 years this August it was.
And who is your teacher, Bob?
My teacher is Mr. Leo Miller.
Well, here is the usual question. About how much do you practice each day?
Oh, I'd say about 2 hours.
About 2 hours. Well, 2 hours practice a day is not too bad during the summer vacation, but how about when school starts?
Well, then I practice some in the morning, and then I finish up after supper.
Sort of split it up for the day. Well, how about athletics? What are your favorite games?
Well, my favorite games are baseball and tennis. My teacher doesn't want me to play baseball because I might get a bump on my finger.
do you concentrate on tennis?
Yes, I play tennis practically every day this summer.
Well, with all the fine music being broadcast these days, I suppose you listen a lot to the radio.
I'll say I do.
Well, here comes that usual question. What are your favorite programs?
Oh, boy, that's a hard question, but I always listen to the New York Philharmonic with Deems Taylor. And I like the 4th hour, and I think that program over Camelot is a lot of fun.
Well, all youngsters have their heroes, and I suppose your favorites run to musicians. How about it?
Well, I guess so. I like Rachmaninoff as a pianist, and I like Victor Herbert's music for light opera. And my favorite classic composer is Mendelssohn and Beethoven.
Well, you were just practicing something by Mendelssohn, weren't you?
Yes, his Rondo.
Well, Bob, do you want to follow music as a profession when you grow up?
Well, I'd like to.
As a pianist?
Maybe, but I think I'd like to be a composer.
A composer? Well, is that so? Have you written any music yet?
Well, a little, but I think I'd better stick to piano for a while before I go in, if I like, in a big way, I guess.
I see. Just playing safe.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for this chat. Friends, you've just heard a short interview with Bob Townsend, 14-year-old piano student in St. Louis. We return you to New York.
Thank you, Bob Townsend. You're a youngster not quite 15 years of age, and yet you've played this very night to far more people than Chopin performed for in his entire lifetime. You will perform for radio again, we hope, and radio perform for you. And in the meantime, in our separate ways, we shall both serve music.
Tonight, the Columbia Workshop has presented the 5th episode of So This Is Radio, written and directed by Norman Corwin, in place of the originally scheduled broadcast of his verse drama, They Fly Through the Air. The music heard in this program was arranged and conducted by Bernard Herrmann. Next Thursday at the same time, the Columbia Workshop Festival Series will be resumed with a presentation of an original play by Lord Dunsany. It is called The Use of Man, and Earl McGill will direct. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.